Good evening and welcome to Your Call. This week, Parliament's monsoon session ended in a complete washout. What are the implications of this as Colgate now travels from Parliament to the streets of India? Joining me tonight on this is Sitaram Yechury, Senior Politburo member and also head of the Parliamentary Party of the CPIM. Mr. Yechury, thank you so much for coming in tonight. The Prime Minister has said at the end of the session that this is discrediting parliamentary democracy, and unwittingly, people here are being used by others who want to destroy our institutions. Not clear whom he meant. He also said that this now means that the government will have to take fast decisions without the benefit of parliamentary debate, and has instructed all economic ministries to move forward fast now. What would you say on the Prime Minister's interpretation and the implications of this?
Well, first of all, I think it's a very dangerous interpretation. Because if you look at it, this session was a washout, and unfortunately it's a washout, and this is becoming a regular feature. We had a washout last year on the 2G JPC demand on the 2G scam, and you have a washout this year on the Colgate scam. So each scam that comes and the demand that the opposition makes, there's a washout. Now, in this washout, I honestly believe that this is sort of a match fixing that's happened between the Congress and the BJP. Because both had too many skeletons in the cupboard, which were going to tumble out, and neither of them wanted this sort of an exposure. And this interpretation of the Prime Minister has added another dimension, that he actually finds it convenient, that this government is no longer going to be accountable to Parliament, so therefore let's take executive decisions. And calling upon the government to go ahead with these economic decisions without being accountable to the Parliament is a very, very dangerous precedent. And I hope, this is not really followed up, and we don't really end up sabotaging our own parliamentary system in this manner. And this washout should not be used as an excuse for the government to abdicate its responsibility.
So are we going to now see policy, really, policy discussions, issues like this out on the streets? Is that our street protest the way forward? Is this an election campaign 2014?
If the BJP wanted this to be an election campaign 2014, it's peaked too soon. It's peaked too fast and too soon, and they will not be able to sustain this. And secondly, any sort of a debate outside the parliament will not be a structured and informed debate that can lead to certain decisions. It can be at best a good tutu mame. It may be politically entertaining on the channels for some time, but then beyond that, it's of little consequence. Like you've seen with all of the discussions that happen outside and do not happen inside. So it is necessary to bring this back, and all economic measures that the government is likely to take, back onto the parliamentary forum.
I think that is a key point. But let me just hear, the left is in an interesting position because the government says, oh, the left wants the house to function, so there's a crack in opposition unity. And the BJP says, oh, the left says crony capitalism, so do we. So interesting position where both are claiming common cause with you. Let's hear what Arun Jaitley had to say about crony capitalism.
मैंने एक शब्द प्रयोग किया जो अक्सर वामपंथी करते हैं और मुझे कोई संकोच नहीं था कि ये crony capitalism था.
Arun Jaitley adopting words that you have often used, Mr. Yechury. You've attacked both coalitions on the economic policies. Yet the fact is, given the current number situation, it will be one of those coalitions which will come back most likely in 2014.
I doubt it.
You doubt it?
I doubt it.
What kind of coalition do you see?
Well, I think it will be a coalition sans the BJP and the Congress. So, in which case we are into a period of certain degree of uncertainty, but I wouldn't call it a regression of Indian democracy. But I think it'll be a process of maturation, and we'll go ahead.
Because earlier such coalitions have been a disaster.
I know. The earlier such coalitions have never been stable, because such coalitions will always have to depend on either the BJP or the Congress. But I think the time has come where, on the basis of the experience of the earlier coalitions, the choices that the Indian people will make now will give a different sort of a composition, which I think would be more sustainable.
But Sitaram, we have Vikram Mehta, an industrialist, to ask you this question, and we'll come back to this question of economic policy. Go ahead with that question.
The Indian economy is facing a crisis. It's an economic crisis and it's a financial crisis. The financial situation can only be rectified if the government addresses the issue of subsidies. One of the key areas that they will need to focus is on the petroleum subsidies. We all know that the oil companies, the public sector oil companies, have an under-recovery last year of over 140,000 crores. This cannot be sustained. The only way that this can be mitigated is by raising the price of diesel, petrol, LPG, and kerosene.
You see, Indian economy is indeed in a crisis, and there's also a financial crisis. But the point is, the solution is not in the question of what is being suggested as cut in subsidies and rise in the prices of fuel. Now you tell me, you know, if you give a tax concession to the worth of 5,28,000 crores in the last year's budget,
mm-hmm.
and you have an unusually high fiscal deficit of 6.9%, which in absolute numbers works out to 5,21,000 crores.
Yes.
Now your tax concessions are larger than your fiscal deficit. Where is your financial crisis?
Where does it add up?
Your financial crisis is because of the concessions you've given, and if the private sector has not been able to grow in spite of this stimulus, then where is the problem? And that is where you're missing the woods for the trees. And
but the fiscal deficit, some would argue, is because of the high level of subsidies India currently gives anyway. They'd say cost of schemes like MGNREGA off their petrol and diesel subsidies as well.
No, but tell me, all of them do not add up to 5,28,000 crores. Now, this 5,28,000 crores of tax concessions are also subsidies for the corporate sector and the rich.
Mm-hmm.
Are they not subsidies? So when you talk of subsidies for the rich are incentives, subsidies for the poor are burdens. So cut down on the subsidies for the poor and keep giving on incentives for the rich. I'm sorry, the country and the people cannot accept it, and it won't work. It just won't work because you're missing the woods for the trees, as I was saying, that the reason why Indian economy is unable to grow today is because of a contraction of your domestic demand. There is not enough purchasing power in the hands of the Indian people.
The rural demand, the recent CRISIL report said that rural demand purchasing power for the first time is outstripping urban spending power.
I think the first time is an illusion. It's mm-hmm. always outstripped, in my opinion. It's always outstripped just because of the sheer numbers. And the rural rich that you've had, the rural rich are mighty rich. we only keep discounting them.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that if you're able to use, let's say, the same amount of money through public investment and build a woefully inadequate infrastructure, you'll create huge amount of employment. And that money that will go in as salaries is going to be spent and pumped back into the economy. And that is what is going to boost your domestic demand and give the impetus for a growth.
Though, Mr. Yachiri, the alternative argument would be, of course, that when you say you give incentive to the corporate sector, it creates employment. And when you say give subsidies to the poor, the problem is the delivery system is so inefficient that most of that subsidy or the huge amount of money which goes into that system is actually wasted because it goes into the hands of middlemen, yeah. traders, wasted food grains rotting, etc.
Yeah, but look at the first point that you made. Giving all these incentives to the industry, where has employment grown? It's on the decline. So the delivery system is somewhere else it's wrong on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
That the incentives go, but they are not translated into production, investments, and therefore employment generation.
Mm-hmm.
They are siphoned off elsewhere. Now, there's also a delivery problem there then.
Mm-hmm.
So the delivery problems are there on both sides. But here, in the delivery of these subsidies, that's why I'm saying targeted subsidies have never worked anywhere in the world. And the amount of money you spend for targeting subsidies is actually much more than actually making subsidies universal. Now, today, for instance, why should a 3 crore costing Mercedes-Benz be using subsidized diesel?
Of course.
Now, we have been crying horse for the last, at least I have been for the last 20 years, I remember, saying that at least have a one-time, tax on diesel, luxury vehicles.
No, but just the point you're making, we can debate, and that debate is a welcome one, of course, in economic policy. But the fact is that, sadly, Indian politics is now a numbers game. It's not so much about policy, but it's become about which party has the numbers. And the left does not have the numbers to make sure the economic vision carries the day, or the economic policy, or that you're taken. Mulayam Singh Yadav or a Mayawati or a Mamata Banerjee are listened to much more seriously than the left, and often their vision is restricted to what they feel their state wants.
That's a sad thing. That is indeed sad. That's why, if you remember, I always say give the devil its due. You may call us the devil as far as economic policy is there, but remember, as long as the left was supporting the UPA one government, your growth rate was 8+, close to 9.
Mr. Yachiri, there's no global factors here?
No, hang on. The global factors, how we protected ourselves from getting devastated, is because of what the left stopped the government from doing. And reluctantly, the then finance minister, now the honorable president of India, reluctantly he admitted on the floor of the house, yes, because we stopped the financial liberalization laws, four of them, we stopped them from happening. He said India was fairly insulated.
The and Congress credited Indira Gandhi with that.
Exactly. And I would only want to remind the present generation of Congress that even Indira Gandhi nationalized banks and coal under left's pressure because she wanted the left vote for Mr. Giri as the president.
Oh, no. So, presidential is back to numbers.
It's back to the left's pressure. It's always been good for the economy and the country.
But it's always been good for the... I think it's always been good for the conscience of the country. I think that's one thing there's no dispute about.
But even materially, I mean, it's proved.
But the voters haven't bought that. And I have to say that in a recent NDTV opinion poll, I don't know if you watched it, but it showed that Mamata Banerjee still retains control of West Bengal if elections were to be held today.
She will.
And so does the left in Kerala. I've got some questions from West Bengal and Kerala. Let's go across to Calcutta and see what they have to ask.
I am Dr. Surajit Ghosh Dastidar. I am a management faculty at Kolkata. My question to you, sir, what specific steps are you adopting in West Bengal for the recovery of your party?
As far as Mr. Dastidar is concerned, I mean, we are taking measures to say, I mean, yes, there are certain mistakes that we have seen in Bengal, which we are correcting. And also the fact is that there has been, well, let's say, an index of opposition unity factor in Bengal last time around, I mean, which is obviously there if you see the statistics. I mean, if the Congress and Trinamool were separate, the results would have been entirely different.
Our opinion polls show that now Mamata would be stronger, in fact, even without the Congress.
Now, I mean, that's what your opinion polls say. But as far as opinion polls are concerned, let's say, I mean, let's take them with the normal pinch of salt.
Sure.
But the point is that is why maybe they want an early election. That's why she's working on. But I'm sure by the time of the next 2014 elections, the things will change, and they are changing for the better.
The left opposition to FDI has often been compared with the China model and said that, you know, the left in India is stuck in a time warp. Why can't they take the China model? You, of course, presented a paper on that recently. Why do you think that the left here is often seen as outdated or out of touch?
Well, you see, China model doesn't really operate to India in the sense that, remember, China is a country unprecedented in human history of three decades of nearly 10% growth. I mean, no country in the world, including the United States of A, had that sort of a record. Now their reform trajectory obviously is at levels which are much, much higher in any parameter than what you are talking about today. There was a time when China did not allow FDI in retail, but it allowed after a certain stage of its development. And that stage came less than a decade ago. So now, I mean, therefore do not compare these sort of things. I mean, they are not comparable. In that sense. And in any case, we take our position on the basis of what we think is in the interest of Indian people and in the Indian economy.
No, but it's clear that the Indian people, if you go by votes, the Indian people are not supporting that policy. So in that sense, don't you need more flexibility or perhaps looking at what a current India wants? They want jobs, they want three square meals a day, basic requirements.
Of course.
Is the left out of touch with that? Because clearly if you had this vision, if your vision is acceptable, you would be voted back.
I wish the election results actually reflect what the Indian people want. unfortunately, today the distortions are so enormous in terms of, you know, it is not the actual democratic verdict or opinion of the people that really matters, rather than your money power, your muscle power, the various other factors that are at work. I mean, it's impossible for parties like us to really contest even assembly elections in places like Karnataka, Tamil Nadu and Andhra Pradesh. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it makes a mockery of what the election commission's financial limits are, or expenditure limits.
Yes.
So, I mean, these are serious issues, I mean, which you really have to, because unfortunately, you really cannot say that electorate's opinion, finally, as the results appear, is actually an endorsement or a negation of a certain policy.
But then why was it when the left did well? When you all had 61 MPs, then wouldn't that same argument apply? Why would you do so well in the 2004 and not in 2009?
Because that is when these changes happened. When did this Manipur come in? When did all this...
On your watch then, the left was supporting UPA one.
No, and that is when, under our watch, it was under control. The moment we left it, it was just just grown out of control.
Let's go across to Kerala, Thiruvananthapuram, for some questions. Go ahead.
Myself is Rohit Nair, and I am a native of Kerala. Mr. Yechury, I would like to know how Communist Party of India Marxist is going to tackle the differences between the two veterans of Communist Party of India in Kerala, Mr. Pinrai Vijayan and Mr. V.S. Sachidanandan. Right now the party is still saying like there is no differences, there is, everything is cleared and all, but still the people in Kerala knows that there is a small differences between, there are clashes between Mr. Pinrai and Mr. V.S. and it is really affecting the name of the party. How do you plan to tackle it?
Everyone's asking the left from the third front. Kerala in some sense is one state where your opponents would say the left behaves like any other political party.
Well, I mean, Kerala is one state where I say that the Congress behaves like the left. I mean, we have
so that's a compliment.
No, compliment for us. I mean, in the sense that we have forced even the Congress, even the Congress-led coalition, that, I mean, they cannot cross certain limits, which are there because of the dominance of left politics in the state. I mean, in fact, amongst the congressmen, if you do a survey, the next survey you do it, I'm sure, I mean, I'd recommend that you do this, which is the state where there's the least amount of corruption, you'll find it in Kerala. Which is the state where there's the highest amount of uprightness in terms of that, you'll find it in Kerala. Because that is the left's influence in Kerala politics has been such, not now, but from the 50s, that left and the Congress had to necessarily follow that. Even neighboring states, you'll find the culture of the Congress different from that in Kerala.
But why has the left culture become Congressized then, using your words?
No, Congress has become left.
No, but the left has become Congressized.
Not really. I mean, it's the other way around. But because this infighting that Mr. Nair was talking about, yes, there was a problem which we recognized, we discussed, we tackled. And like he says now, they may have small differences, but they're definitely differences. Yes, differences have now come down to the level of small, and I'm sure they're on the way out. And that is what it is. I mean, the last 3-4 months, if you notice, there's absolutely not been any controversies of the like that you had in the past. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, I'm actually confident that the processes that we have set in motion is actually, I mean, unifying the party better.
What do you think? I mean, we all know, of course, the famous Jyoti Basu statement on a historic blunder. What do you think in that time, what has been the left's historic blunder over the last decade?
Well, I wouldn't say there's historic blunders.
Oh, I mean, big blunder.
There have been certain wrong estimations that were being made. And the wrong estimation then, one thing which our opponents always say is that you always say that you made a mistake. That's because we always accept a mistake that we made, while others don't. I mean, we accept it, therefore it is done. Yes, I mean, there was wrong estimations that were made, mm-hmm. let's say in the 2009 elections, where we had thought that the third front that was then conceived, so-called, we finally said it was neither viable nor credible for people to believe that this sort of a combination.
Projecting Mayawati and Jayalalitha, both who were seen as corruption allegations against them.
Yeah, not only those individuals, but if you notice, all these parties are basically parties confined to their states. No, you can't have a possible national alternative with parties that are only confined to 3-4 states. And in 28 state India, I mean, you can't have a national alternative coming out of this sort of a thing. Yes, I mean, that was a certain, miscalculation or a wrong estimation. So, I mean, they were wrong estimations that were done, but I wouldn't say they were blunders of that nature, but estimations which cost the party, and the left.
But how is the party rebuilt, even in terms of electoral viability? You will have to go back to these same people, in a sense, perhaps enlarge it to include Mulayam Singh Yadav. Mulayam Singh Yadav also meets Mamata Banerjee one day, meets the left one day, so he keeps all his options open.
Yeah.
So in that sense, what has changed between 2009 and 2012?
One that has changed is that we have to rely entirely and exclusively on our basic strength. You see, all these equations apart, they only become secondary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is one important lesson. I mean, that is, it is on the basis of our strength that our equations with the other parties will also be determined.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is what we are working at. I mean, between 2009 and 2014, one basic change that will come is to strengthen the left and democratic forces, as
mm-hmm.
we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is important. It's only on that strength that the others will also come together. And that's what we are endeavoring to do in this period.
One recent statement by Mr. Prakash Karat, of course, was that now no longer to keep the BJP out will we ally with the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, between the choice between, say, the two C's, as may be perceived by the left, communalism versus corruption,
mm-hmm.
can the left manage to actually stay away from both?
That is our objective, because it's not only communalism versus corruption. It is corruption versus communalism plus corruption. it's not that.
That's a deadly competition.
Exactly. So the point is, our effort is to see that neither of these would be leading any coalition, or the choice is not reduced between the two, and you'll have a third pole. And that is important, that center of the third pole in the country should and will be a left and democratic alternative. Now, that is what we are working for.
What about the winnability factor, Mr. Sidharam, actually? Because increasingly we are seeing in states, regional parties are taking the forefront. National parties, their base is increasingly shrinking.
That's correct. That's because the national parties are actually ignoring the regional issues.
No, that includes the left.
I mean, that does include the left, but the ignoring of the regional interest is much more with the major national parties. Take, for instance, Andhra. I mean, it was a bastion of the Congress. Now, what do you see there today?
No, but Jagan emerges as the alternative. Mm. The left has no young leaders who emerge as alternatives. Jagan has emerged as the alternative to the Congress.
Yeah, but Jagan also, I mean, with all these charges and all these background and all the history behind him, we'll have to wait and see whether, I mean, there is definitely an emotive appeal at the moment, and a very strong emotive appeal. I mean, there's no doubt of that. No, but how long is that sustainable? That needs to be seen. But what you're saying is basically right, that things seem to be moving in terms of, say, emotions in one place, some other factor in another place. I mean, they're not, in that sense, a national vision. Mm-hmm. Now, the left is the force that can possibly weld these together into a national vision. And it is that national vision that we want to give, and before 2014, to try and give that vision as an alternative to both the BJP and the Congress-led alliances. Mm-hmm.
The left has always stayed away from individuals or projecting individuals. But given, again, the current political scenario, we've seen it's very much personality-based, whereas the BJP, where you project Congress, you project a Rahul Gandhi versus Narendra Modi fight. In a sense, the left doesn't do that. Do you think that's a failing?
No, that's right. I think it's a very positive thing in us.
Because but it's done by every political party in India now.
No. I mean, but just look at the BJP. It's got a hydra-headed, sort of six aspirants to be the prime minister.
No, exactly. So they say if they project one, they would be in better condition.
No. But the point is, they did last time. What happened? So the question is, eventually, remember, the people of our country do not really vote for the candidate being projected as a prime minister. They vote on the basis of what they feel, what the change they want. And when they do that, somebody becomes the prime minister who's nowhere been in the picture, like you had Devagoda. I mean, you had that situation happening. Mm-hmm. But you also had like VP Singh, where the projection is that of a prime minister. Mm-hmm. So it's a much more complex issue than only saying, yes, you have a leader or no leader. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of various factors. And I think the left's, left is seen as not as an individual-centered force. And I think that's a big advantage we have as far as the Indian people are concerned.
Mm-hmm. Between the two, whom would you prefer, Rahul Gandhi or Narendra Modi?
At the moment, I don't think Rahul is interested in coming. And definitely not Narendra Modi. Mm-hmm.
As we end the program, sir, it's often said about the left that your heart is in the right place, the problem is with the head. When you talk about, I think nobody would argue with your vision of a much more equitable India. But how that's actually going to happen? Rahul Gandhi himself has made the point that while he agrees with the left in what it wants to do, what is the solution? You have to have growth, you have to have liberalization, you have to have the economy boost. You can't ignore one aspect, say industrial India, corporate India, for the other. And in that sense, the Congress in a way takes a left centrist role and occupies the space we would have thought left voters would take.
No, the Congress has always done when it played a role which was left of center. I mean, look at it historically. I mean, it's always done well when it took a left of center role. But as far as the left has got the heart in the right place, but remember, everybody has got their heart in the left. So everybody's heart is in the right place. As far as we are concerned, it's on the left. But it's a question, the matter is with the head. I mean, how do you go about achieving it? Now, the question is nobody. I mean, that is the point where I think even we have to self-critically admit the fact that how our vision of dealing with the modern world is not adequately conveyed communicated to the people. I mean, nobody is today saying that foreign capital cannot come into India. But we are saying, like every sovereign country, let us decide on capital that will enter our country which will be beneficial to us and which will be mutually beneficial. Mm-hmm. No foreign capital is going to come only to benefit us. I mean, they also have to be benefited. So what do we say? Any foreign capital that comes in that adds to our productive capacities, upgrades us technologically, I mean, expands employment opportunities, it's welcome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the position we've taken. So, I mean, is there any better way of dealing with modern world? Now, if just because the West is in crisis, do you want me to approve opening up the Indian agrarian economy, agrarian market, to the dairy products of the West, or to the agrarian products of the West, when my farmers are committing suicide?
Mm-hmm.
Does that help us economically? No.
It's always nice to end an optimistic note. And I talked about the young leadership of the CPIM. When will that generational change be? I'm talking the potential next general secretary of the CPIM.
As far as I'm concerned, and most of us are concerned.
Why the left doesn't allow personal ambition?
No, not that. I mean, we are motivated by an ideological consideration in Vikami, and I, for one, and many, I know, and never sought any sort of a post. I mean, if they come, it comes as an additional responsibility, not an ornament of a post. That's all it will be.
I think that's a great way to end. And as I said, always nice to end a note of optimism. Sitaram Yechury, thank you so much for taking the time to join me tonight. Thank you.